Welcome to Special Needs Navigators ABCs of Disability Planning Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. I'm glad you're here. My name is Eric Jorgensen. I created this podcast to help parents navigate the maze of benefits, resources, and services. I'm on this journey with you. My son is on the spectrum. I was widowed in 2012, and I beat cancer in 2020. I get that life throws us curveballs. Every week, my guests and I do a deep dive into things our families may come across. I don't spend too much time focusing on a specific disability. My intent is to help as many families as possible. You may already be familiar with some of these topics, others not so much. My goal is to increase awareness of and provide context around what's available, when to use it, and if applicable, how to apply it. Let's dive in. Today, the service I'm going to be talking to you is about tax planning if you have a child with a disability. And I have with me Brandon Leo. Brandon is an accountant with Turning Point Financial. He is a CPA and a CVA. That's Charlie Victor Alpha. For those of you like myself that didn't know what a CVA is, it is a Certified Valuation Analyst. In plain English, that means Brandon helps business owners understand the true value of their business. It's more complicated than that. There's a lot of different nuances to it. There's a lot of different considerations. But if you're a small business owner and you're looking to perhaps have a merger and acquisition, or you are looking to seek funding for your business, those are the types of things that Brandon would do using his CVA hat. Today, we're going to be talking about more of the personal taxes side, which Brandon also does. And I really want to focus on helping you understand when should you itemize versus standard deduction, whether or not you should claim your child as a dependent, and what types of questions you should be asking yourself when you're making that determination. And we're going to review some common mistakes people make when they're filing their own taxes. I want to be clear that nothing in here is tax advice. We do not have your personal circumstances in front of us, so we can't give any tailored recommendations. Everything we're talking about is meant to be general information. And I just want to be very, very clear about that, because sometimes when I'm talking to experts like accountants or attorneys, it can come across almost that this is what you should do. And the answer really is we don't know until you have the opportunity to sit down with a professional and share your circumstances. With that disclaimer, I'd like to turn it over to Brandon and let Brandon tell you a little bit more about himself and just share as much as you want to. Welcome, Brandon. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you, Eric, for having me. It's great to be here today. And kind of what Eric was saying before, I do work for Turning Point Financial. I'm the Director of Accounting Services, and we are located in Frederick, Maryland. And our company does work with clients with investments, insurance, taxes, accounting, and just the combination of all those things together. So a big part of my job is to work with families on their taxes and tax planning. And I like to look at it from an approach of lifetime tax planning rather than just paying the lowest tax in this year. We look at it more of a lifetime approach, 10 years, 30 years, just in terms of saving overall. Now, that can be tough with tax law changing, pending tax law, possible changes, but we do the best with the information that we have. And there can be a lot of moving parts. And for those of you listening, just complicated scenarios, it's possible that there's just a lot of tax planning involved in that. So that's what I focus on. I enjoy helping others, and I'm happy to answer some questions today.
Awesome. Thank you, Brandon. So we're going to start with a softball, as it were, and really lead in with the difference between itemized and standard deduction. And I think it'd probably be helpful if we could explain the two different terms.
Sure. So this comes up for a lot of people preparing. If you're preparing your own taxes, or if you have them prepared by a tax professional, should you itemize? Should you use the standard deduction? Just a definition of both. The standard deduction, it's based on your filing status. There's a flat amount, and it's listed on the slide there. For single, it's $12,400, and married filing jointly is $24,800 for 2020 tax year. Those are adjusted upwards for inflation each year. So that's a standard deduction. If you have no other deductions, you're allowed to take that on your tax return. So you take that, or you take the itemized deductions, which are expenses that you're paying out of pocket. And there's four main categories right now for itemized deductions, and those would be the medical expenses that you have, any state, local taxes, real estate tax, income tax that you would pay out, and mortgage interest is the third, and the fourth would be charitable donations, whether it be cash or non-cash.
And I want to point out, I caught it in the notes section. I didn't catch it on the slide. The unreimbursed medical expenses is actually incorrect, right? You were telling me it should be 10%.
Yeah, as far as 2020 is concerned, it's 10%. In prior years, it was 7.5%. That's just something that was changed with tax law. And things like that change each year. So just it's not uncommon for that to go through. But as far as those four, so just taking the total of those, there are certain restrictions, which we might get into today, we might not, in terms of how much you can take for medical or mortgage interest, or even the state and real estate taxes on that. Typically, you would take the higher of the two, whichever might benefit you, but there can be some complications that arise from that. One example, located out of Maryland, I do a lot of Maryland tax returns, and the Maryland return itself has a much lower standard deduction than the federal standard deduction, about $4,000 or so. So it's a much lower floor. So in some cases, it makes sense for some of our clients to take those itemized deductions, even if they're lower than that standard deduction, because of the benefit that they receive on the Maryland return can far surpass whatever small additional taxes they might be paying on the federal side. Just that being said, it's just a little bit more complicated than at first glance, but it's important to know the differences between these two when preparing a return. And it's important to know what makes up these itemized deductions. And you just want to be able to maximize those deductions, make sure you can you have them all listed, you're not missing anything. It's just very important when it comes to, it could be a large amount of tax difference if you're being able to capture all those items.
So you mentioned it may make sense to itemize using Maryland as an example because they have a lower standard deduction rate. So if you itemize, you have to itemize for both federal and state. You can't pick or choose, right? You can't do the standard for federal and itemize for the state.
Well, that's a good question, Eric. And it does depend by state. Maryland, you can't, you have to do both. You have to do for one, you have to do the other. There are some states, so it would depend on whatever state that you reside in. Some are a little bit more flexible where you could take the higher standard deduction on the federal return and then the state return you might be able to itemize. But that is something that does vary state by state.
Awesome. And then keeping track of the deductions. If you're working with somebody who says they have a lot of medical bills, are you looking for receipts? Do you take them at their word? Should people be worried about auditing and keeping all their receipts in a shoebox? I mean, what kinds of things should they be keeping if they're going to be itemizing, and how long should they be keeping it?
So it's important to keep track of those expenses just at your personal level, just any medical expenses that you have. It's helpful to categorize them by general category and just based on the tax return. You have the prescriptions, you have the deductibles you're paying for a doctor, dentist. You might have just specific in terms of travel that you might have or any specific equipment that you might have, just to have those and then to have the receipts behind those. So keeping those organized, it's helpful for the person preparing the return. You want to have that in place. And as far as when I'm working with clients, we do have an engagement letter that to say we're not auditing you, but we do take a look. If something looks off, we'll ask a question. If something might be missing, then we'll ask a question as well, just because that's part of my job is to help in terms of just making sure the deductions are on the return and they're correct. If something's way off, then we'll talk about it, but it's mainly the job of the taxpayer to have those expenses, keep track of them, and making sure to just discuss with someone. If you're not sure, you can research it on your own, or you can discuss it with a tax professional because some of the expenses, especially if you have a special needs child, it can be quite a lot in terms of medical expenses and just wanting to make sure that you track those.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when we were talking before the meeting, some examples where it really comes, really pays to work with a professional could be if you have a service dog or, you know, or a service animal. There's things that you may be able to claim, but it's not so easy to say on a something like a webinar like we're doing to say, oh yeah, if you have a service dog, here's all the things you can claim, right? Because it's just too, if there's too much that goes in with the tax code, it's something you really need to make sure you talk to the, make sure, is it a service dog or is it a support animal? Is it, you know, what kind of animal is it truly? And do you have any documentation and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, just those designations are important. And I mean, just the way the IRS works, you report it on your return, you do that in good faith. And unless they're asking questions to you, or unless you go through an audit, it's up to you to keep track of those and put those things down correctly. But it's also your job to make sure those are appropriate deductions, because the IRS is not checking every single expense every year. That's the purpose of the audit, is to do a randomized and things that look like red flags to examine those things. But just to have those in place, the example you gave, the service dogs, if you have a service dog for medical purposes, there's quite a bit of deductions that you can get for the care of that dog. But in terms of if it's something that it's more for therapy or it's more therapeutic in nature, it might not be deductible, but you just... you have to ask the question, you have to look to the provider if it's something that can be a medical deduction or not, because those expenses can add up quite a bit and they can definitely affect your tax return. So just having that in place and knowing the designations, it makes it more complicated that the tax code can change each year and there are pending changes and there are sunset provisions. So just keeping up with that, even if you knew the tax code in and out 3 years ago, well, things have changed since then, and certain things that were deductible before are not deductible. So just keeping up with it, it can be helpful to work with a tax professional whose primary job is to keep up with the tax code. Keeping up with that, it is important, and just having the accuracy of the return, it can be difficult with all the changes in place.
And if the family, maybe they've been overwhelmed and they haven't filed a return for a couple of years, that's not a reason to continue not filing, right? I mean, I could see a situation where maybe a family is overwhelmed, so they just forget, you know, life, their kid's in the hospital or something, and they forget a year. The next year comes around, they're like, oh crap, we forgot last year, we don't want to file this year because dot, dot, dot. So now it's been 2 or 3 years since I filed taxes. It's not an automatic assumption, or it shouldn't be an automatic assumption that they're going to owe tax, right? I mean, there's always a possibility, even if you haven't paid taxes, you may still come out, you still may be okay. The sooner you get ahead of it, the better, right? I mean, if that's another situation where it really pays to talk to a professional.
Yeah, and I've worked with families who have been quite a few years behind in terms of taxes. And the way the tax law works is not filing definitely works against you. If you're late by 3 years, then any refunds that you would have coming are no longer valid and you wouldn't be able to get them. And on the flip side, if you owe taxes and you don't file, you get hit with late filing penalties, interest on the taxes due, whereas it's just not a good situation. It can really add up. It can be, you know, almost 50% of the tax due in terms of penalties and interest over time, or even more potentially. But the IRS does have some programs where if you cannot pay the taxes due, they really want you to file the return. They can have some flexible things such as an installment agreement where you pay it over time, where they give you some time to do that. You still pay some interest on it, but you're avoiding those penalties for the non-filing penalties, which can be pretty substantial depending on how much tax you owe. So to your point, Eric, if you're behind, it's just really important to try to get caught up. That's the first step. And when I work with clients, that's always the first step, to get it caught up and then to just round everything together and we can work on the tax liability. So those pieces, I mean, just it can be very overwhelming, and just by, you know, hiding for another year, it's not going to help in any way. It's just going to prolong things.
And in the last comment on this, if a family has taken the standard deduction last year or the last 2 years, but now that they've been thinking about it, they've watched this video and they're like, oh, wow, we may qualify. We have medical things that we should be deducting, or, you know, we bought a house, we didn't think about the mortgage interest, or something like that. They can hire somebody like you to review their past records and submit a change, right? I'm not sure the terminology, but they can make a change to it, right?
Yes, yes. If there are some deductions that were missed, or even if there was a W-2 missed, for example, you can file an amended tax return, is what it's called. And basically that's sending your corrections to the IRS and to the state as far as if things were missed. For example, if there were significant medical expenses that were missed, and there is a 10% of your income threshold, and anything over that would be in the itemized deduction category. But if you took the standard deduction and then there are all these itemized deductions that were missed, then an amended return could be filed to help capture some of those. Whether or not there were taxes owed or a refund with the original return, this is just whatever the change. So if it would be a $500 change in the taxpayer's benefit, they would file the amended return or use a tax professional to help them with that, and basically submitting the changes so things are correct on that. Like I said before, there is a 3-year limitation on your refunds. So you could go back a couple of years potentially to still recognize some of those missed deductions possibly. But again, it can get complicated very quickly. So I would recommend working with a tax professional who understands the amendment process, who can help you through those steps.
Yeah. And I bring it up because I had to do it the second year I was in business. The first year was actually profitable because I had tried to do it on my own, and I'd made a lot of mistakes. So, you know, because I'd never filed a business owner tax return before, and I'd always been a W-2 employee, and yeah, the accountant made a pretty big difference in my life. So I just want to make sure people know that there's advantages, and, you know, they shouldn't look at hiring somebody as pure cost. There's so much advantage to working with somebody that really knows what they're doing.
Yeah. And to that point, it's typically pretty easy to get the income amount, because as a business owner, typically you know how much that is coming in. So a lot of times if something's missed, then it can be deductions that are missed, which typically would benefit. Yep. Yep. In terms of lowering the taxes, because the income's pretty straightforward. Just depending on the source of income, the IRS gets copies of W-2s. They get copies of 1099. So they know how much someone is bringing in that regard. So it's just having those deductions in place, knowing what you can deduct. And just even 2020 is a great example in terms of just the legislation passed, in terms of what it might look like, what things have been passed, what might be passed. And it's hard a little bit because things are moving. So just trying to plan ahead for those and keeping wind of any changes, it's a lot. It is a lot to keep track of.
And it's a good segue with all those changes to talk about, should you claim your adult child, right? Because the answer is, it depends.
Always the answer.
So, well, what types of things should people be thinking about when they're considering, hey, I'm thinking about claiming my adult child? What types of questions should they be asking themselves?
So, well, there's a couple things. The biggest question is, can you claim your adult child? So is it a possibility, right? So we want to make sure that would be the case. And that would depend on, a big part of that is who is supporting, who is 50% support. To have that, you would need to support someone over half. Now that would be whatever support they might be getting. If they're working as well, then that would go into what their support would be. So just looking at that, and then if it's determined at that point that you could claim the child as a dependent, then you'd have to see on each return what makes the most sense in terms of just having the dependency or not. And with the new tax law, it is a little bit different because the exemptions are no longer there, but there are credits for younger children. You can get a $2,000 credit, and other dependents, it's up to a $500 credit. So there's a lot of different factors that come into play in terms of how that makes sense with the different tax rates for the child and the parents, certain thresholds that you can cap out on in terms of certain credits. Now, the child tax credit, the additional dependent credit, that threshold's pretty high as far as the new tax law. But just taking a look, does it make sense for the child to claim themselves or the parent to claim them? Typically, just in general, if the parents can claim the child, typically it's a beneficial, it's the most beneficial scenario, typically. But it's not always the case that parents could claim the child. So that's, again, it does depend on their different income levels and the different levels of support that they might have. If they are totally or permanently disabled, then there is more flexibility in terms of claiming someone.
Awesome. Looking at my notes, we had talked about briefly about the difference between, I think it was refundable and non-refundable credits, and what the difference was between a credit and a deduction, because those were also things that people would be thinking about with regards to the children, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with what's a deduction and what's a credit, because I think there's a lot of confusion around that too.
Okay. So a deduction would be something that lowers your taxable income, and a credit would be something that lowers your income tax. So hope that's clear enough. So the deductions in place, like we were talking about, the itemized deduction or the standard deduction, having those in place, if you have significant charitable contributions is one example, that will lower your income as far as how much of it is taxed. So you go from your income to your taxable income to your tax. So having any of those deductions would reduce that taxable income. And then once you get to that level, there are certain tax credits that you can have. And to your point, Eric, some can be refundable, some can be non-refundable, some can be both. The child tax credit being an example, one portion of it is refundable, another portion is non-refundable. And that the credits are more valuable than the deductions because they're a dollar for dollar reduction on whatever tax that you might owe. If you owe $1,000 in tax, but you get a $500 tax credit, then the tax is reduced down to $500. And where the refundable piece comes into play is when you get to the point where you don't have any tax at all that is owed. And the refundable portion would be if it would be greater than that amount. The IRS would pay you back that even if there are no taxes due. So those different designation that is important, and they come in different steps on the tax return.
So this, if there's no taxes due, that could be a good reason for somebody to file a return even if they normally wouldn't, because they may qualify for a refundable credit.
Absolutely. Yes. It just kind of depends on the income level. Some, like the earned income credit, don't kick in until you have a certain amount of income in place, but others can be in place if you have very little or no income. So you want to make sure that even if you might not owe any tax, there might be some credits available. So you'd want to take a look at that because sometimes they can be substantial, just depending on the situation. But that's another important piece to look at.
And this is where I know I'm beating this drum, but it's so important to talk to a professional, because if you're using TurboTax or something similar, that's a very passive system. It's going to do whatever you tell it to do. There's no back and forth. There's no critical thinking being applied saying, well, earlier you were telling me, for example, that you drove 80 miles one way to get to Children's Hospital and you spent a week there, and then you drove back and it was you and your child spent the night in a hotel for that week. Your child was receiving care. And so let's circle back and say, how much did you spend on that? I mean, because there's some things in there that could be a deductible expense. And then you also told me that your child was working and that they're paying you some rent. So they may, to your point about are you providing more than 50% of support, maybe you're not anymore, and maybe they should file their own return because they also contributed to an ABLE account. And so I'm painting a scenario because I want people to hear that there's so many different moving parts that if all you're doing is relying on what that TurboTax or similar tax prep software to help you figure out if you're missing anything, you could really be doing yourself a disservice. You know, in the two examples I gave, going to the hospital, spending time in the hotel, and then driving back, a lot of that is deductible, right, Brandon? I mean, the mileage and the hotel stay, those may be considered medical expenses.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of it can be potentially deductible. So to your point, just keeping track of that, and a tax software will ask for the input and it will take the input and put it on the return. So there's a couple of different mistakes that people can make. They could put in the wrong inputs. They could put it in the wrong place. They could think something's a deduction when it's not a deduction. Those are all things that the software is meant to try to walk you through it. But once you get to a certain level or a certain complexity, just like any other software, it runs against limitations. And really, it's your responsibility to know what should be on there and what should not. And just, I mean, I've heard silly examples of people putting, you know, adding a couple extra zeros to a deduction or something like that. And then it shows up on the return and it, you know, it's not, there's not going to be a cross check if someone doesn't notice it. And, you know, it sounds crazy, but people have filed returns like that and just that kind of thing.
No, absolutely. And what are some other mistakes that you've come across where, I mean, have you ever come across anything that was so I don't want to poke a finger in somebody's eye, but maybe it was a mistake easy to make, but it could cost somebody a lot of money. Do you know what I'm saying?
There are quite a few of those. Yeah. I mean, I won't get into one specific item, but there have been cases where people have missed claiming a child as a dependent. And, you know, if it's a child tax credit, that can be $2,000. And, you know, it sounds crazy, but I see mistakes on paid preparer returns that are at this level. So just having that in place, I mean, typically the W-2s are fairly straightforward. So I see more mistakes on the itemized deductions. For example, if people are contributing to charity, especially if they're giving Goodwill donations in terms of clothing or other tangible goods, just the valuations on those, how they're valued, how they're recorded. There's a lot of room for error on there, mainly because people aren't sure and there's not too much in place. And there's a lot of ambiguity in some of those terms. So just having those set up in place, I see a lot of errors in that area. Anytime someone owns a business or they might own a rental property, I see a lot of mistakes on rental properties. There's just certain things that need to be in place, like depreciation on the property that a lot of times I'll see for a self-prepared return is just missing from the return. So things like that, it's just a knowledge thing where the tax offer might not be asking you for these specific things, but there are significant deductions in place. So those are a couple of the common ones that I see fairly often. And like I say, I review other paid preparer returns and I see mistakes on those as well. So there's just a lot of, you know, it's helpful to have another set of eyes on things in terms of you only know what you know. So some things you think you can be filing just fine, but then it might not actually be the case.
Absolutely. So last point I want to make on that is I believe it's possible if you're caring for your aging parents that they may be claimed as a dependent too, right? Or no?
Yes. So that is also a possibility. And that would be that $500 dependent credit that I was talking about earlier. It might be a possibility. If they're not a qualified child, then there's some additional income limitations. They would have to have a lower income in place to be able to do that. But again, it'll revolve around the half support for someone. So they don't necessarily need to live with you to be able to support them and claim them as a dependent, but there are certain income limitations and then just how much you are contributing for their well-being.
And that's good to know too, that they don't necessarily have to live with you, because a lot of the families have their children set up in a separate apartment, but the parents may still be paying the rent, you know, and helping with the groceries and maybe paying the cell phone bill. And I mean, all the other things that go with living independently, but the child is on their own. So definitely good things to keep in mind. And the best way, so I have your email up here. I have your website up here. You are based in Maryland, but you can work with people anywhere, correct? I mean, if somebody's in Wisconsin or Texas and they want to work with you with regards to taxes, tax prep, you can do that, or am I wrong?
Yes, I can work with any state, and we do some out-of-state returns for those who have moved away or just those who happen to be contacts that live in different states. Some people have to file state returns in multiple states. Maybe they have a rental property in another state or different sources of income. So that is something that we can help out with. There are state-specific laws. A lot of what we talked about today was at the federal level, but the states have their own laws. They have their own tax credits. They have their own deductions. And that's another thing to keep in mind as well, just keeping up with that state tax law.
And that's where, again, working with a professional, especially to your point about filing in multiple states, I'm biased. I own my bias. I think there's nothing better than talking to somebody either via Zoom screen or in person when we can get back to it. But getting to ask those questions, I mean, I say it often with the disability world, you don't know what you don't know, and trying to navigate your way in the darkness by yourself, it's dangerous. And why not have somebody who can take you and show you where the pitfalls are and give you a heads up of the common mistakes? We alluded to a few of them. So I definitely think people should reach out to Brandon. If you have a question, is email or phone the better way to reach you, Brandon?
Typically email is a little bit easier if there are specific questions, but I'm happy if there's a phone call, that's not a problem either.
And if there was one last thing that we leave the audience with, what would that be from your point of view? I've put my soapbox away.
Well, I would just say the importance of planning in terms of just having that tax planning. A lot of people are more reactionary when it comes to taxes. And there are certain things that if you're more proactive and you're more up to date on things, that you can save yourself possibly some significant dollars in terms of maybe this year, maybe over the course of your lifetime. So just to do that planning, to take the time now to do that, can be very beneficial for you.
And with that, we're going to end another episode. I'm sure, Brandon, I will be having you back, because I do think we just scratched the surface with taxes and what we have to do to keep the episodes brief. So thank you.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you for listening to the ABCs of Disability Planning podcast. We invite your feedback and comments. Please feel free to leave a review wherever you are listening. And don't forget to hit like, follow, and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. If you would like to connect, please email me, eric@specialneedsnavigator.us. If you'd like to learn more about or talk with a guest, please reference the show notes to find the best way to reach them.